Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution. Hello and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Annika Smith with the Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, and today I'm joined by astronomer Guillermo Gonzalez, co-author of The Privileged Planet, to get his take on the news that scientists have recently discovered what they consider the first habitable planet outside of our own. Guillermo, thank you so much for being on the show today.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
So let's get right into it. Gliese 581d is the name of the new exoplanet. Some scientists are saying that it's the first, quote, potentially habitable planet they've ever discovered. And these news stories are reporting that it meets these key requirements to sustain Earth-like life. How accurate is that? Can we find life on this planet, do you think?
Well, I think the operative word there is potential. As long as you put the word potential in front of it, that's fine. they've come up with some climate model calculations
mm-hmm.
for a rocky planet with roughly the mass and orbit that this star has and around this M dwarf star. And they calculate that if, a big if, it has a thick carbon dioxide atmosphere, then it can support liquid water on its surface. And so one of the requirements for a planet to have Earth-like life is for there to be liquid water on the surface of that planet.
Right.
That planet be in a stable orbit around a star.
And so they've got those two down.
Yes. And,
okay.
Still, the system is still very different from ours in a number of ways, which has a bearing on the habitability of the planet. And, of course, those are things that were not considered in the study.
Naturally.
Like.
Well, now, if I'm right in what I'm reading, they're talking about this new planet being in the galactic habitable zone, or in a habitable zone. And
it's in the circumstellar habitable zone.
Circumstellar,
that's right. Meaning around the star. And it's also within the galactic habitable zone because it's a very nearby star to ours.
Right.
So
okay.
We're in the galactic habitable zone, and this is one of the nearest stars to our own. And it's certainly within the galactic habitable zone. I don't know the orbit of the star in the galaxy, though, compared to ours. It almost certainly has a different kind of orbit than ours. I don't know what that is. And that may pose a problem. It may take it too close to the galactic center. I don't know. I have to look into that. But there are other problems with the system, which would lead me to believe that it's not as habitable as the Earth.
Okay.
First of all, they don't know that it has liquid water on the surface. That's just a speculation. They don't know the composition of the atmosphere. They're just saying if it has a thick carbon dioxide atmosphere, then it could have liquid water on the surface. And so you have to figure out how the planet might have formed, if it formed with a lot of liquid water or if it formed with only a little bit of liquid water. That will depend on the specifics of the formation of the planet, and that hasn't been studied. Also, the planet's much more massive than the Earth. It's something like at least 5.6 times the mass of the Earth. And
all right, so we wouldn't want to be walking around on that, no.
No, it's very massive, and it's currently controversial as to whether or not rocky planets more massive than the Earth can have plate tectonics like the Earth has. There's a controversy. Some say that more massive rocky planets won't have plate tectonics. Others say that it will. And plate tectonics is thought to be very, very important for habitability for the carbon dioxide cycle. And so that's an open question. And if it does have a thick carbon dioxide atmosphere, that would preclude complex animal-like life, which requires high oxygen, low carbon dioxide atmosphere. So if it is habitable, it would only be for simple life.
For bacteria and... Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
And it orbits a red dwarf star, which is different from our sun. The red dwarf star is much cooler, and they tend to be more variable in their light output. And so it would certainly lead to a less stable climate than our Earth enjoys around our very stable sun. and it'll be subjected more to high energy events from its star, flares on the surface of the star.
Wow, so it doesn't sound like a place we want to go try to colonize anytime soon.
No, and there are, and it's likely tidally locked, meaning the planet, one face of the planet always is towards its host star, like the moon is to our Earth, and that causes problems. If it were to have a thin atmosphere, then one side would be very hot, the other side would be very cold. To get partially around that, they need a very thick atmosphere. So,
right.
That's one reason they're excited about this possibility, in that, well, if it has a thick atmosphere, then it would have more similar temperatures on the night side as compared to the day side. But again, the caveat is thick carbon dioxide atmosphere. And even with a thick carbon dioxide atmosphere, it's not clear that a planet could retain a thick carbon dioxide atmosphere for very long if it has oceans, because carbon dioxide dissolves in water. And that's how it's removed from the atmosphere, actually. Chemical reactions in the oceans remove carbon dioxide from our atmosphere. It's returned by volcanism, but oceans are a very efficient way of scrubbing carbon dioxide from a planet's atmosphere. And so if you have oceans of water, of course, and water is an ingredient for life, then it's not clear that you can maintain a thick carbon dioxide atmosphere for very long. So these are all issues
yeah.
that come up. The system that need to be addressed and make it very, very unlikely that this is as habitable as the Earth. And there are the questions, does it have a large moon like we have? It doesn't look like it has any Jovian planets. The planets in this system all appear to be relatively low mass, and we know that Jupiter in our solar system is very important in protecting the inner planets from too many comet impacts.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's another question.
Wow. So when scientists are quoted in these news stories as saying they're hoping with new generations of telescopes that one day we'll be able to really search for life on this planet directly, and this is, you know, generations down the road,
yeah.
Is this a really strong hope, do you think, or are we going to be disappointed?
I think it's not a very strong hope. I think we should study in more detail
yeah.
as technology improves, and for example, to determine what the composition of the atmosphere really is. It may tell us, oh, no, it doesn't have a thick carbon dioxide atmosphere, for example. It may have some other composition. And that'll be an important fact that needs to be accounted for in planet formation models. It'll help fine-tune our models. And,
right.
And so that's useful information to know.
And how do researchers go about figuring out what the composition of the atmosphere is? How do they study that?
Yeah, they're going to need to build larger telescopes in space and take spectra of the planet. And from the spectra and the infrared, they can tell what the composition of the atmosphere is. And so there are plans for instruments like that in coming years. And so people think they know how to do that. It's just a matter of spending the money and doing it.
Right. So these answers are a long ways off for us still. Wow.
Yes, but I'm impressed with the technology and the mm-hmm. rate of discovery of these planets.
So mm-hmm.
Really, it is an exciting time to be an astronomer and to be alive while these planets are announced, especially the Kepler mission, which is still collecting data and is currently the most sensitive telescope for detecting planets. It's a space-based telescope and has detected several hundred planets so far. And that's a very exciting mission.
Oh, that is really exciting. And I should let our listeners know that you, as the co-originator of the Galactic Habitable Zone concept, you and your research have done a lot in contributing to that and in contributing to people discovering these planets. Isn't that correct?
Yes. And I work in the field of extrasolar planets as well, and I determine the properties of the stars hosting planets, and I figure out how they're similar and how they're different from stars without planets, and those give us very important clues as to how these planets might form around other stars, and so that's an area of research that I'm engaged in up to the present day.
Well, very, very cool. Thank you so much for being on our show today, Guillermo. It's sure. been just a pleasure and a treat for our listeners and for me.
Thanks.
Well, for ID the Future, this is Annika Smith with the Center for Science and Culture here in Seattle. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.
Want to spend your summer studying intelligent design in Seattle for free? Discovery Institute is raising up the next generation of scientists and scholars with the 2011 summer seminars for college juniors, seniors, and graduate students. The two intensive 9-day learning opportunities run from July 8th through 16th. This year, in addition to the seminar focusing on ID and the natural sciences, the Center for Science and Culture announces the new C.S. Lewis Fellows Program on Science and Society, which will explore the growing impact of science on politics, economics, social policy, bioethics, theology, and the arts. Discovery Institute will pay expenses for students who are accepted into the programs, and applications are open now through April 22, 2011. For more information, visit www.discovery.org/STEM. That's www.discovery.org/SEM.